The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. Let's start the Monday thing. Gary, how are you?
I'm doing really good. We have got so much to talk about, and it's just never ending. So let me take a sip of the coffee, all right?
All right, what do you got?
Well, Trump does right on trade. We'll get to that here in a little bit. Bernie's tweet.
Yeah.
And it got just a ton of response. It's where he talked about baseball players.
Right.
The nation pays baseball players, I'm paraphrasing here, enormous amounts of money, but doesn't pay teachers as well. Had to be reminded that the nation doesn't pay either.
No. Doesn't work that way.
Right. The nation doesn't pay. Baseball owners pay baseball players, and state and local governments pay the teachers.
Well, in Bernie's world, though, they would nationalize baseball. I mean,
it would be so bad. American baseball players would be going to Cuba.
Yes. I mean, you know, you already have the Nationalized Football League. we're already halfway there the name.
Wait a minute. With the taxpayer money that goes to build many of these stadiums, you may have a point.
See, Major League Baseball didn't do that. You know, they're like, oh, whoa, hold on.
You know, when you brought up the NFL, I got to bring this up because I went to a very, very sad but very, very inspirational event over the weekend.
Right.
People probably have seen it over the last couple of years. There was a man by the name of Ezra Castro, who was the Buffalo Bills super fan, known as Pancho Bila. Okay, and he's one of those. He was one of those extreme fans, and he got cancer 2 years ago. He was the head of the DFW Bills backers that I've got so many friends that are in that group. I never met him. But I went to his public viewing. He died last week. I went to his public viewing and, the memorial service on Saturday and was with just a ton of great people. And there were fans from, and he requested that if you showed up, that you wore your favorite jersey of your team. There were Cowboys fans. There were Patriots fans. There were Bears fans. There were Broncos fans. There were Raiders fans. Sorry, Raiders fans. I'm moving to Vegas. And it was just, I think I saw, again, I didn't specifically look, but it seemed like every single team was in there. Hundreds upon hundreds of people. The line was so long for his viewing, but over the last couple of years, now he's always been the head of the one in Dallas. And if people don't know, if you've always lived in your hometown, there's backers teams for every NFL team, every NFL city, and these are people that live outside of the city, you know, that they love and cheer for, but they get together and they watch the games. What a lot of these groups also do is they involve themselves in charity. They say, okay, we're going to root for our team in a different city that we're in, but we want to make sure that people know that we're immersing ourselves. Anybody who walks into the bar or the restaurant where they meet, we want everybody to know that we immerse ourselves in the community. And so they do a tremendous amount of charities. And I've been involved in those in the past, and they do a great job. And Ezra was all about this. He died after a two-year battle with cancer last week, and part of his wish and part of his goal, which is going to be continued by the Bills backers and other teams across the country to make these charities nationwide, that is going to be the goal. He got himself involved with cancer. And I'll tell you this, the way that the NFL responded, they allowed him to pick. They were going to allow him to pick this year one of the draft choices for the Bills, and he did pick the Bills' first draft choice last year. ESPN has been all over the story. The NFL has been great. The Bills owners have been great. And I want to say this because I think it's really important. You and I talked about 2 years ago about the whole Colin Kaepernick thing and how we just were, you know, we just disagreed. Look, they can do what they want. They're private businesses. They can do what they want. And we talked about how we didn't want politics to be brought in. We're the last people that want to shut anybody up, even on the left. But we said, look, the NFL, football, there isn't a bigger sport in America. It brings communities together. It is one of those last pure things where people from all aspects of our society gather together and they're all unified. And what I found, and you and I, and you weren't really watching as much as I were, but stopped watching 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And because we didn't like what was going on. We didn't like the divide. We didn't like the way that the NFL handled it. I love that the way the NFL handled this, and I will say one thing. I put on a Bills uniform for the first time in 2 years the other day, and it was because of the sense of community that this man, in his battle for cancer, united so many people together. It was what he went through the last 2 years and how the NFL responded, how the Bills responded, how fans from all over the NFL responded to his plight and then his wish to create more charities out of the publicity that he got and then expand those nationwide. That's what sports is about, is supposed to be about, and it's what the NFL is supposed to be about, and we have seen it there. And so I just want to look, we talk about when people do things that are we believe are incorrect. It's very important to talk about when people do things that are right. So the NFL overall responded. All these fans from all over the country responded. And I know the family was very, very appreciative. I got to talk to the family, and they were extremely appreciative of all the response of all the NFL fans. So when you just brought up the NFL, it just made me think about what I did over the weekend.
But, good.
So some good was done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some good happens. We talk about how we're doomed and everything else, but good happens in society every day, and it's important that we
sure.
mention that.
You bet.
Also coming up, Buttigieg was on Fox. The president not pleased about that. By the way, and he got a standing ovation, and what people have to realize is that when you do these town hall meetings, probably if Buttigieg speaks, you're not going to have a ton of Republicans want to go to that. They're not going to take time out of their day to go to see Buttigieg. You're going to get Buttigieg fans who are going to go.
Yeah, that's
Elizabeth
the
Warren
idea.
Fans who are going to
right.
go. So to get a stand, there's a big story, standing ovation on Fox News, as if Fox viewers are being converted to vote for Pete Buttigieg.
Right.
Let's stop that and stop that now. Buttigieg is, I saw some of the answers that I saw. I haven't seen the whole interview, but the answers that I saw, weak. We said this all along. Buttigieg is trying to, portray himself as a Midwestern kind of guy. He's a radical leftist.
Yeah. And again, you fill the room with friendlies. This is something that's done, whether it's staffers, volunteers, a number of people that will show up to make sure that they fill that room, especially in that setting, so that they can show they're trying to put on some kind of display that Republicans like the guy because it's on Fox News.
Right.
Not the case.
No. It's not really dumb when I see it. It's like,
well, stop you have trying to make that completely case. Ignorant of the process to believe that that was the case.
Right. Buttigieg is converting loyal Trump supporters.
Yeah.
That's not happening.
That's not happening at all.
They magically, just listening to him for 15 minutes, just said, oh, wow, this guy. Oh, I say, whatever it was, an hour, the town hall meeting. After an hour, I'm converted. Trump who?
Right.
Pete Buttigieg, he's the guy.
Yeah, that's not happening.
So we'll talk more about
Although
that.
Chris Wallace might be converting. Holy cow. Over the years, I don't know how many interviews we would pick apart that Chris Wallace did, and we'd say, you're not asking the right question. You didn't stop the person, and you didn't interject or correct the person and interject a correction. The president saying he likes Mike Wallace better. Okay. Well, now we're going to make it a family thing, I guess. I don't know that how that applies. But the fact of the matter is, I think Chris Wallace has been off the mark on a number of issues. And we've called him out lately for that.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole narrative he's trying to push that Barr is protecting the president.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That he's running interference for the president. You cannot break down the facts, as we have said, as an investigator, and look point by point at that and say that about William Barr.
Chris Wallace said that, actually. You know, you think about it, he started right away with and it was a line from the left. But the morning that William Barr stood up there and talked about, the Mueller report, releasing the whole Mueller report, the redacted version that the public is aware of, it was right after that press conference. He sounds like he's the personal attorney for President Trump, and not the U.S. Attorney General. And that's false. But it was a line that had already been constructed and planned by the left. Why Chris Wallace used it, I have no idea. I have no idea where he is politically, but he was wrong.
Look, we've said this about Giuliani. Giuliani is the one who sounds like President Trump's lawyer. Well, because he is President Trump's lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And at times he makes arguments that are so dumb that you and I have said, the president should say, look, I want you to be my personal lawyer, but don't go on TV.
Right.
Because you do a terrible job.
Right. Quit talking about ongoing cases.
Right.
You're not helping.
And so you look at him and you say, yeah, you can't say, if you know the facts and go point by point on it, you can't say it. By the way, I had a conversation with a couple of acquaintances that are liberal, more liberal, I'll say this, over the weekend, and went point by point. Because, again, they were dismissive of everything. And I said, well, no, I criticize Trump when I believe he's wrong. But here's the part. Nobody had any argument. The two people I was talking, they just looked at me like they, well, said, if you, and I went point by point on what Hillary did. I said, what the Democrats did is exactly, what the Democrats accused the president of is exactly what they did by their definition of collusion. No argument. Yeah, okay, yeah, they've gone over. And with the treason and everything else, I had them responding to me that, yeah, you're right. It was too far to go say that Trump committed treason because there really is no evidence. Mm. They agree. After you broke it down, they agreed. And that's why we have said, and I still believe that the Republicans don't do a great enough argument. What's his name? The representative out of Michigan that said that, you know, he has seen the Barr report and that Trump committed obstruction of justice. He's full of it.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't, by the way, if you see his whole thing that he laid out for impeachment, nothing. There were no specific allegations of why. Now, impeachment, again, is a political process, but he could make this case for obstruction of justice. We've gone through it point by point. You can't do it. It's impossible. But just like the abortion issue over the weekend, which went again into the stratosphere of social media, people making dumb arguments, comparing it to capital punishment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the arguments being made right now on almost every topic are just so dumb. Well, except here on our show. I mean,
well, and it's something that it takes on this whole new life with social media, and once that happens, sorry, all bets are off. The facts don't matter.
Also coming up, an article on changing the term climate change.
Mm-hmm.
They did once, remember? They tried it. Sure. It just didn't
climate
catch on.
Chaos.
They tried climate chaos. It did not. It
was
did
global
not stick.
Warming. Then it was climate chaos, climate change. I don't know what you do. Global chaos.
No. They have
mass hysteria.
No, they have no. They
dogs and cats living together.
You ready?
Yeah.
Climate breakdown, climate crisis, climate emergency, ecological breakdown, ecological crisis, ecological emergency.
Wasn't ecological breakdown, wasn't that a Bob Dylan album? Pretty sure it was.
Iran, the situation with Iran and the White House effort for economic investment in the Middle East. We'll get to that. Mm. Uber will allow you to request that the driver not talk to you. It was my favorite story of the weekend, by the way.
All right.
Stats on the Philadelphia soda tax, something that we had talked about a ways back. Plus your calls and comments. We had a great show ahead. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. Interesting, I had some talk with Trump supporters over the weekend, too. I had a lot of conversations, probably five or six conversations over the weekend. It was very, very busy. And I got a ton of lawn work done, too, even in the midst of all the rain that we got. But we got into the whole trade thing, and they were a little bit confused. They weren't sure where Trump was going on trade. Because we discussed what happened on Friday, and they just said, do you know where he's going on trade? Because he talks tariffs, but then he lifts the tariffs, and he talks about the trade imbalance. But the only way you could change that is everything that we've talked about. You can only change that with tariffs in a way. So we don't know where he's going. And we said, well, if you actually look at it, he's the results of the free trade agreement is him being much more of a free trader, and the fact of what happened on Friday, where he again officially took off the steel and aluminum tariffs with Canada and the steel and aluminum tariffs with Canada and Mexico, and then half the steel tariffs with Turkey.
Right.
They added additional tariffs last year and took them off.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that the Wall Street Journal had a article that came out over the weekend and listed all the companies that stopped investing because of the tariffs in the first quarter that might affect the second quarter. And they had the whole list of all the different companies that had, said, no, it's not time right now to do capital investment because we don't know what's going on with trade. And the president's reaction last week, after the beginning of last week, where we went, whoa, where is he going? And all of a sudden, by the end of the week, it's almost as if, okay, we need to solidify it with our good trading partners and isolate China. I hope that's where the president is going.
It looks like that's what they're gearing up to do with G20 coming up next month. For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
We won't see the same intense risk of severe weather we saw yesterday as a cold front continues to push east, but there will be the chance for some high winds, hail, and thunderstorms along a cold front moving eastbound right along the Mississippi River. And as it progresses eastward, it's going to lose some energy. We do have a very wet week ahead from North Texas into Oklahoma, Missouri, and portions of Wisconsin and Minnesota, expecting in that region another 5 inches of rain this week. It'll be much drier in the mid-Atlantic and deep south. The west is under a big cool down with chances for rain this week. Los Angeles today, the high only 67. Phoenix, 78. Denver, 58. The upper Midwest is cooled down. Kansas City, 68. Indianapolis, near 70. 90-degree readings today from Texas into the deep south up into the mid-Atlantic. The national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
They're Loaded for Bear. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley, 866-90-RED-EYE. So the president, well, we believe, making some really good moves, and we hope that, and Eric, you had said last week, and it just hadn't entered my mind at the time when you mentioned it last week, when we were talking about how the president seemed to be evolving on tariffs with Mexico and and Canada, and half the, you know, and then took off half the tariffs that they had put on late last year on Turkey for steel, opening up the world market for steel after the president had used that was great for America over and over and over and over again. And look at the steel industry and look at this and the economic growth, and it's helping America. And this is part one of the questions that I had from a couple of Trump supporters over the weekend, stating, well, then he's saying one thing, but then he takes them off. And I had to let them know that's because he knows he's not telling you the truth on those particular issues.
Yeah, the numbers aren't going to lie. And when you talk about investment right now, you need to, there's a couple of things that needs to happen. You need to, those tariffs need to be gone so that we can work to our full potential again, like we were in 2017. If you look at the numbers, and some of the underlying numbers for 2018 going into 2019 aren't great and will eventually affect negatively the GDP numbers. And we're seeing that in transportation, in fact. You see that the capacity is changing greatly in trucking. And that's one indication that the factories aren't working to their fullest potential. The producers here, domestic producers, aren't working to their full potential. So then you go to the other side of it, and how do you gather support to go to the table with China? You do exactly what Larry Kudlow has been saying all along. Since before he was at the White House, he was talking about putting pressure on tariffs, and you do that on China. You do that by gaining the support of your other trade partners. And so now the president is calling on Congress to quickly pass the USMCA. We'll see if that happens. But no doubt, with the tariffs being gone, it sets a clean table for everyone else. And then you head into G20, hopefully with your other trade partners on board, saying, we're not going to do business with you, and they're not going to do business with you. You need to make a deal.
The goal from the very beginning, as you and I have always said, was, and we agreed with Larry Kudlow on this, was to isolate China. Mm-hmm. By the way, Larry Kudlow is the president's chief economic advisor, and he came aboard a little over a year ago, and we always agreed and believed that the administration was making a mistake by isolating the United States, by trying to pretend that we were in some trade war with Canada and Mexico, and even Europe for some extent, even though I do understand Europe, because they do tariff more than that, not much more, but they still tariff more than any relationship between the United States, Canada, and Mexico. And the goal should have always been unite that trade bloc of the European Union, the United States. By the way, even at the TPP, renegotiate, do something, but keep positive with the TPP so you can isolate other Asian. If you go in and you have the United States, you got the European Union, you've got Mexico, you've got Canada, you've got the growing countries in Asia that want to be part of the TPP, you get it all together and you use that bloc against China.
Right.
And that should have always been the goal from day number one. If that's what the president is trying to do before, you know, at least to have, because the other thing the president did was delay any automobile tariffs for at least 6 months, or delay even making a decision on automobile tariffs for 6 months. And let's put it this way, odds are he doesn't want to in 6 months get into a trade war with the European Union.
Right.
So everything seems to be moving in the right direction. This was from Vanity Fair here on Friday. This was going back to... this goes back to Thursday of last week.
Okay.
On Friday, Trump intends to decide whether to apply a new round of global tariffs on billions of dollars of automobile imports. He is not. Mm-hmm. The messaging coming from out of the White House has been all over the place. Trump's claims that tariffs are fueling record economic growth in the United States, was contradicted by his chief economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, who told Fox News, well, both sides will pay. Trump reportedly had it out with Kudlow following the interview, the Washington Post reported. According to sources, Kudlow, the famous supply-side free trader, is burnt out by the job. In June of 2018, he suffered a heart attack. Kudlow's relationship with Trump has never been particularly close. Quote, anytime the markets go down, Trump bothers Larry, a person close to Kudlow told me. While Kudlow was telling friends he's having the time of his life, he's also eyeing an exit. According to sources, Kudlow wanted to leave the White House this summer, but Kudlow agreed to stay after Trump said he didn't want Kudlow leaving until the China trade war was resolved. I need you here for the markets. We need a united front, Trump said. According to a source, a White House official said Kudlow has no intention of leaving. As a trade war drags on, a daylight is appearing between the president and the GOP. Trump is getting a lot of blankety-blank from Republican senators. A Republican close to the White House said, speaking with reporters this week, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley said, both countries are going to be hurt if a deal isn't reached soon. People are getting nervous about the farmers. A former West Wing official said farmers are planting right now and farmers need to make sure customers are there when this is all over. So, again, that's the reality of the pressure that goes on when you put on tariffs. We said last week when the president was talking about record economic growth and how great it is and China pays, we're like, why is he doing this? And then by the end of the week, really sort of does the absolute opposite of what he was just saying a few days earlier. This does not help the president when he does this.
No.
And there's no reason to do it.
And hopefully the everything will fall in place with China. You get a deal done by the end of the summer, which means the tariffs are gone and the economy is doing great like it was in 2017 with lots of investment promise going into the election year. And it's at that point, the messaging is done for you. And you, there's really no way around it. A positive economy is going to mean good things for this president next year. You can't undo what you've done here if those tariffs are gone by the end of the summer. There's no way to you know, turn back. You're building confidence in investors, and hopefully that's going to mean good things.
Well, what you do is, I mean, the goal number one is to have a good economy. The second goal is to ensure that you're reelected in 2020 and you give the Democrats no argument whatsoever.
If he gets a good deal with China, I think it's going to be a couple of things. The underlying numbers with the tariffs being gone start to go in a positive direction again. With, again, investment and everything else, the GDP numbers haven't suffered greatly. The question is, where would we be without those tariffs? We'll never know, but we'll know now in the future if those tariffs are all gone. And then enforcing the intellectual property rights for China, that's going to be something I think where the world looks at him, not just domestically, the world looks at him, and if they do get a good deal done, it will mean, I think, great things for a long time to come. You won't be able to measure that until we get further down the road, but I think being able to enforce intellectual property rights clauses in any contract with China is going to be a big deal. And I think at that point, the world will have a... you won't be able to get around the fact that you're going to have to respect that kind of attitude toward China. Again, it all relies on the enforcement mechanisms. But right now, the ball is in their court. This is the great thing, yeah. I guess, about this politically, is that with China, the ball is in their court.
The other thing the Vanity Fair article doesn't mention, I think should be brought into this, is by the time you got to the end of the week, what the president did, because he was talking about Kudlow being burned out and everything else, mm-hmm. It shows that if you look over the last year, sure, the president has his outbursts at times, as he did early last week when he talked that tariffs are great, and by the end of the week, he's removing tariffs, not from the Chinese, but he's talking about the general, you know, the concept of tariffs, how they bring money in and they boost the steel industry and they do everything. Well, then why did you remove them all? Mm-hmm. If they worked economically, why now? But it also shows, even though it's disappointing that the president obviously isn't telling the truth on it, because you see what he did by the end of the week. It does show that Kudlow is having his influence, and to me that's a good positive sign, and a good positive sign for the markets that Navarro and Lighthizer aren't the ones, because they're much more protectionist, aren't the ones that are leading. Irrespective of whether the president is being always truthful here, the direction of where the White House is going, I'm in agreement with.
Well, I think that it likely had to do with some numbers of leading economic indicators that were showing this isn't going to be good. And this is where it starts to really be felt, is down the road, which would be second half of this year into next year. You can't play that in a positive way. Sorry, a bad economy, you may not blame the president for it, and you may not want to give the president an A grade and give him all the credit for a positive economy, but a bad economy is not going to help you win. It's going to work against you, especially this president. There's no way around that. And so if you've got leading economic indicators on the number of companies who are pulling back investment, there's no way around it. There is no way to change anything. There's no way, nothing else you can change. Doesn't matter how much money you give to farmers. They said right away, we don't care about the government money. We want the trade routes reestablished.
It took us decades to get into those trade routes. If we're undependable, if our customers can't look at us and say, you're going to be consistent, they'll go elsewhere.
I think the president, and I think the administration, the four horsemen, Navarro, Lighthizer, Steve Mnuchin, and Larry Kudlow, probably believed that they were going to get this deal done with China sooner than G20. And that, because remember, the talk was getting something done, at least in agreement, in spirit, by the end of the first quarter. So now you're looking the end of June, and we haven't heard anything else. I'm sure talks are going on. Messages are being sent back and forth, but really no official talks being planned that we're aware of before G20.
Let me ask you this. By the president not putting the 25% tariff on the other $300 billion, you think China looks at that and says, okay, that's the point. The president won't go further. You think they look and they say, look, he may say one thing, but you see how he has taken the steel tariffs off Canada and Mexico and everything else. Does the president understand, and do we have the best negotiating point now with the president, because we believe we know what his limitations are? And again, will they mistake in what the president might actually do?
Well, are they thinking, is he gearing up by lifting all the other tariffs with other trade partners?
That's true, yeah.
Is he gearing up to implement that other $300 billion with us at 10% as a starter, which would likely be the case, 10%, because the official notice when they got the ball rolling last week said up to 25, which gives him room. He could start with 5. He could start with 10. He could start with 25, but I doubt he would do 25. But are they wondering, and is that, I guess, the new narrative in the messaging back and forth? The president's gearing up to really go hard at China before G20, and he's doing that by shoring up every other trade deal on the planet before he does that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carling. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Well, all the pundits out there have talked about what William Barr might be looking into. We'll actually play some audio coming up following the top of the hour from Attorney General William Barr to find out where he actually is going.
Yeah.
Also, Biden out there saying that over the weekend, out there campaigning, that the hatred and the anger and the division must go, and he is here to unite the American people.
Yeah, sure he is.
By the way, that's such a load.
It really is.
Nobody's here to unite the American people. Stop it. People are not going to be united because the parties believe in a lot of different things that make other people angry at them.
Yes. And he's been part of it.
Yes, he has.
For a long time.
Yes, he has.
He smiles while he's angry, but trust us, he's angry. He gets angry like anybody else.
How many people out there who is really a concern that the president is a unifying influence on the issues?
Right. Yeah. I don't know. And here's the other thing. I don't know that I would categorize this president as angry. Where's the anger coming from, Joe Biden? Your side.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Who is it that's shouting people out? Do you remember people? I mean, a trend where people were shouting out people, shouting them down at a restaurant for wearing an Obama t-shirt. Wear a MAGA hat in a restaurant these days and see what happens to you.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Everybody doing okay?
No.
That's good.
I'm so sad that I missed Games of Thrones. Is it game or games? Whatever it is. Everybody's talking about it and I feel left out.
I have to tell you, and you and I had this conversation.
Game of Thrones. Okay. What?
You and I have, you know, we've had this conversation in our pre-show meeting. I just looked at you and I said, I'm completely out of the loop.
You know what's interesting?
I don't know anything.
Yeah, I've never seen an episode. I have no idea.
I don't know one character. I've never seen one second. I don't have a clue as to what Game of Thrones is.
I've had family members say you'd like it, but I, you know, what do they know? I don't trust my family. my wife thought, you know, she said, hey, why don't we just check that out? You know, we could binge watch that on weekends, but we have very little time together. Usually we get about an hour of television together. That's our date on the weekends. And we haven't had even that over the last like 6 weeks, right? It's like passing in the hallway. Hey, I know you. And I saw tonight, you know, getting ready for the show on social media, I can't believe that ending. I can't believe that ending. Really? I spent all this time, one person, it was actually another actress from another show. I can't believe I spent all these years keeping up with this and this is how it ended. I want a do-over. And I'm thinking to myself, well, okay, great. I guess I didn't waste my time. People said that about The Sopranos, although I thought The Sopranos was a really good show. If you go back and watch The Sopranos now, tell me if I'm wrong about this, but The Sopranos now seems more like a parody of a mafia show. There were so many things where, not a parody of itself, but it was almost like they were doing a dark comedy or something. And I don't know why, where that changed. At first, when I watched it, I was like, oh, man, yeah, this is great. And then all of a sudden, I watched it again. But there are, you know, there are plenty of great shows out there. I talk about a couple of the ones that I watch. But having the discussion about the shows, you know, apparently there's great discussion that goes on about this Game of Thrones. I can't believe this happened, or I can't believe that happened, or that happened. And it is almost akin to fantasy football. You know what I mean? It's that kind of discussion where it really is kind of a sports thing, a game thing, contest thing. So I really have no idea, but it's way too involved.
So it continues week after week after week.
Yeah, I guess.
So it's like it was the same concept of 24 back, what, 15 years ago?
Yeah, any series
when that first came out.
Every week, yeah.
And I, yeah, but there, every series does, but it doesn't, the storyline doesn't continue. If you watch Law and Order, for the most part, unless it was a double Law and Order.
It's episodic as opposed to being serial in nature. Yes,
yes, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Everything is completed within that 1 hour. Mm-hmm. You can watch that one hour and get the...
Yeah, there are some storylines that continue on the personal side of the character development, but yes, the case is going to be wrapped up.
Right, the case will be... I like that. When 24 came out, I loved 24.
Mm-hmm.
I watched about the first three quarters of the season, and it was like, okay, I can't do this every week.
Mm-hmm.
And I never watched it again. And how long was that on for?
I don't know how many seasons they went.
Never watched it. Never watched it again because I didn't just. And I find out, and I do think it's because of how fast the news cycle goes. I am spending more time on the show than I've ever spent before. The distractions in my life are actually work related, as to because news moves so quickly. I do find, and I've talked about this, I don't watch sports as much.
Mm-hmm.
I watch 1/10 of the sports that I watched 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I really do. I mean, there's not much. I tell you how bad it is. I came in today and Brian said, what do you think about that sports controversy of the golf? Now, it's golf, right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what he was talking about.
Mm.
Now, I'd gone to sleep about 4:30. I was so busy all weekend, a bunch of different things. Then yesterday was just all, you know, lawn work. Heading out of town this weekend, and it's supposed to rain all week, so it's like, got to get all the lawn work done on Sunday.
Mm.
I was so tired because I was up at 5 a.m. in the morning and just housework, lawn work, everything else. It hit, you know, 4 o'clock, got something to eat. By 4:30, I was looking at the golf going, okay, the PGA Championship going, oh, wow, Dustin Johnson's moving closer, even though Brooks Koepka had such a huge lead to begin with. It was down to 2 strokes, and it's like, okay, I'm going to sleep. I just was so tired. I went to sleep and missed the controversy, which was he had a huge shot. He had a huge shot that was like a matter of winning the tournament or not if he hit a good shot.
Mm-hmm.
And they went to split screen, apparently, on CBS and was interviewing Dustin Johnson, who everybody knows Dustin Johnson is the most boring interview that you could ever do of any golfer ever. And that's saying something when you're talking about a golfer,
mm-hmm.
but he's just, and they split the screen on Koepka's shot, but it wasn't. And he ended up doing good and ended up parring the hole and winning by 2 strokes. But I didn't know about it because as soon as I woke up at 10 and it was just what's going on in the news. You know, what's going on, all the different, you know, moving topics out there. And so I really think that even TV, sports, a lot of things, just because the news cycle moves quicker, there are so many different sources for news now compared to 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago when I started doing talk radio. It's a completely different concept. I really spent a lot more time on the show than I ever have before.
Yeah, it's... I watched one movie over the weekend, which is now was immediately when it ended became one of my favorite movies of all time. And I really, when I was going through the queue of things to, you know, to rent or see or view on Saturday, I had some extra time because it was just, we just had massive amounts of rain.
Yeah, we did.
I had worked all day Friday, and I thought to myself, well, my wife was helping my granddaughters with some things, and I thought, well, okay, let's see what's on. The Professor and the Madman. It's the story of how the Oxford Dictionary came to be. And it's incredible. It's an incredible story. You have essentially a couple of hours to spend, and I knew I'm going to hit pause. My son always teases me on this. He says, but you hit pause. Your pause button is always the most worn-out button on your TV control, and it is. But on this one, I didn't have to very many times, probably 8 or 10 times in a two-hour movie. But Mel Gibson was in it. It was, I thought, a this really great performance by Mel Gibson. And then Sean Penn, hands down, best performance ever by Sean Penn. And what was it? Was it Mystic River? The one movie, the one crime movie where he's the dad and the child goes missing. I think it was Mystic River.
Oh, okay.
He was really great in that movie. I'm not the biggest Sean Penn fan, but holy cow. In the context, especially of the storyline, but you think about somebody, a group of somebodies actually at Oxford,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the, what, in the 1850s saying, okay, we're going to set out to define and find the origins of every word in the English language. And it just became this, and it, you think about that kind of task. It was well over 70 years before they got it done. And you, I think to myself, in the way they described it, the way they, the characters, the two men, it was based on
real
life.
Well, now you're going to make me want to watch that movie because you know what my thought is?
Hmm.
How do you make a movie like that interesting?
Okay, see, here's the thing. I instantly sent my daughter an Amazon gift card so she can buy the movie. My oldest daughter, she read so much as a child, the doctors warned us that her eyesight was going to, and I mean, it was nonstop reading, nonstop. And eventually, I gave her a graduation gift. Her college graduation gift was eye surgery, and we had to find a specialist. There was only one in the entire metro area that could do, that could correct her vision. Best money I ever spent. Much of that had to do with the fact that she read nonstop. And I thought, this is for her. This movie was made for her. But you think about the task of saying, we're going to get with scholars all over the world. We're going to find the origins of every word in the English language. And there's a subplot that goes along with this. That's the madman part, and the connection between those two main characters and how it all came to be, how difficult it would have been. Think about what we have in our hands. Think about what we have available to us. And this is what was maddening at the end of it for me, is look at how much information is out there and look at how ignorant people still can be. The very basics. I mean, if you had said to any of these scholars right. at Oxford back in the day, I don't know, some of the very basics of I don't know, a government system, three branches of government, you know. And by the way, it was an American. There was an American that actually helped a great deal with that. I don't want to give away. I sent that message to my daughter when I gifted that e-card. And I said, I want you to use this to buy this movie because I know you're going to love this. And I told her the description is, it's about how the Oxford Dictionary came to be.
Well, you understand.
And that sounds as boring
right.
as it gets.
You understand my point.
Any justice.
How do you as a director say, and that's, I don't want you to answer it.
Right.
Because now you've intrigued me and I do want to watch it. But that is my question. How in the world do you make a movie, as fascinating as it is when you think about it, mm-hmm. but how does a director make a movie like that and make it so you want to watch the whole thing, and at the end you say that's one of the best movies I've ever seen, especially when we live in the day and age when this movie is based on a true story, and the true story is never good enough, they have to embellish it with things that never happened.
Right. I mean,
and some of the,
it's
some
the
of those
human stories.
Really,
yeah, it's the yeah. human stories that, you know, behind how things came to be, right? That I think that Hollywood has missed out on for a long, long time, and nobody's taken a look at a number of these stories. There are way too many stories where they haven't really told those human endeavors. And if you were to say that to somebody today, this is what I wonder. Given even with the technology we have today. Imagine saying to someone, I want you to go out and find the meaning of every word in the English language. Even with smartphones and computers.
Oh, What a tax. The unbelievable tax.
I quit. Yeah. No, I'm gonna be the first to raise my hand and say, yeah. I quit. Yeah. I got to go.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the mid-1850s. We're going to send everything by letter. The requests will go by letter, and we'll contact anybody and everybody that we can, all these known scholars, and we'll reference books, we'll reference a number of things, and we'll start there.
How do you finance something like that?
Well, that's the other thing, is that it couldn't be fully financed. You're going to rely on a number of people doing it voluntarily,
right,
without pay,
right,
making a contribution to that effort. And you have to know that, and this is the first thing I thought of, and it plays into the storyline, language is ever evolving. We see it every year right now. These words were added to the dictionary, blah, 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 blah. That's because language does evolve, which means while your work may never be complete, the process that you put together in order to make it happen is astounding. And I just, and the way that it was described, if you have any respect at all for communications, for religion, for a number of things that, again, are going to be defined by those words in the English language, I don't know of a more fascinating movie and process to watch play out.
And here, when you said best movie you've ever seen, I was sure it was going to be John Wick 3.
I'm saving that for next week.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Need operating cash to get you through a rough spot? Big Rig Lending can help. Mike Frabel of Big Rig Lending tells us how.
Everybody hears Big Rig Lending and thinks we do financing. That's really not what we do. We're small loans, $15,000 and under. We are really built around repair loans, working capital, insurance down payments. I have recently, over the last 6 months, 8 months, seen an increase of new owner-operators getting into the industry. And we have tailored a few products around to help them as far as setting themselves up financially with enough working capital to get off the ground and get running. Okay. We have what's called our 10-4 promise. That means we're going to take 10 minutes with you. You're actually going to talk to a person, one of our funding specialists. They will get information about your business, your truck, and yourself. And then you'll send 4 pictures. From there, they can send it to underwriting within a few hours, have you a pre-approval amount, so we can help all credit types. Credit is not a disqualifier with us. We fund in as fast as 48 hours, where most other lenders are 7 to 10 days. One of the things that helps us with that is we do our own underwriting and we are our own bank. So when we put the whole package together, we're looking at how long have they been in the industry? What is the truck value worth? What are they looking for? What is the repair? We're finding out all the different details that you can't find out just by a credit score.
For more info, go to BigRigLending.com. This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Bernie Sanders' tweet, we'll get to that. And I want to get to that because it's a kind of tweet that I look at and I'm just like, well, we're not even on the same planet.
Right.
We're not even on the same planet. Our complete concept of life and society is completely different. We'll get to that here in a little bit. Plus, the Fox News interview with Attorney General Bill Barr from late last week.
Yeah.
And it was released after we were done with Friday morning show. So we'll get to some of that because we can speculate on what they're looking at and we've connected a ton of dots. The Attorney General can't even make the things that we know because he's doing a separate investigation. You know, he's doing a number of investigations, but he talks about his concerns.
Right. And it would be the same concerns that some of the same questions, I guess, we've been asking for
almost all of them are the exact same questions we've asked for the last 2 years.
Right. And so then it gets down to the evidence. You know, is there anything, what I guess is actionable in terms of what he has seen so far? Because obviously he's seen a lot more than what has been made public so far.
And Trey Gowdy over the weekend talking about Papadopoulos and the informants from the FBI, where he has seen some of the transcripts, and he said if the American public saw those transcripts, it would actually change a lot of people's minds.
Fresh, hip, and cool. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on the new Red Eye Radio.
What?
Wow.
The all new. Everybody's thinking, why is it new?
The it's all not. New.
It's not.
The all new.
Same old, same old.
Well,
blah, blah.
But that's a play on that you hear once. Radio stations will use that for like years.
Yeah.
The all-new soft adult contemporary music station.
The all-new Hot FM. Yeah, no, it's not new. It's
the
not.
The
all-new classic
hot,
rock.
The all-new Hot AM.
Yeah, right. The all-new classic rock. There's nothing new about classic rock. That's the whole point. All right.
Hey, one more thing, speaking of music, just a side note. I did see... this was getting a lot of social media play. Elton John coming out against the critics of the actor who's portraying him in the movie Elton John.
Right.
And he's not gay.
Right.
And Elton John's like, I don't care.
It doesn't matter. He's an actor.
He does a really good job. I think we have to inform people on the left. And this is where at times I think to myself, we're not in the same universe. We're not in the same world. Any actor portrays a character who is not themselves.
Yep. Yep.
Do we have to go any further?
I don't think so. How many have played soldiers and don't have any military experience? How many have played... how many movies have they done about the Civil War? Well, those people weren't alive back then. We should only have people who were alive back then. It's ridiculous. They either as an actor do a great job or they don't. It's that simple, right? But now it can't be that. We must have this person with this identity must be the only one that can portray this person with this identity. No, that's not true.
Why?
Yeah, why is that?
Because I find it offensive if it's not.
Neil Patrick Harris on what was the comedy he was on CBS?
Oh, so I something my mother?
Yeah, or something.
How I met my mother. Yeah. Yes, yes.
So I did something to my mother. What?
he
didn't play a gay guy.
No, he played a lecherous heterosexual.
Yeah, right.
And I was offended by that.
Jim Parsons.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah, he's straight in that in.
Yeah, well, I mean,
Big Bang Theory, right? Yeah, he is a girl
dating a girl, yeah. But you know, yeah, so. Anybody shouting about that? No,
oh, I was livid. I didn't sleep nights.
Right. It's like, get over it. They're actors. You know? Well, because if you're going to do that,
they lie for a living.
Well, this is what they do. They're not real. They're not the real person. That's what it comes to. Because at the end of it all, you could get down to only the real person should play that person. What do we do with fictional characters? Oh, we'll get back to you. Because otherwise, you would limit the you would have to limit the roles of gay actors, right?
Mm-hmm.
They on Netflix, they did the movie about Ted Bundy. Now, there's two things. There's the Ted Bundy tapes on Netflix, which I think you have to watch first. Then they did a movie with Zac Efron as Ted Bundy, which was, I never would have put the two together, but man, does he look like him and act like him. He had the mannerisms down. James Hetfield, lead singer of Metallica, also has a small part in the movie.
Really?
Yeah. He plays the cop that pulls him over, that initially pulls Ted Bundy over. Jim Parsons was in it as a prosecutor in the Florida cases, the two Florida cases.
Okay.
The two killings in Florida. So he plays the prosecutor there, and there was no talk about whether he was gay or not.
But
I have no idea.
But as far as I know, he's never been a prosecutor.
He doesn't have a law degree. As far as we know, maybe he does. But I'm not aware. But see, that's how ridiculous it gets, because if whatever identity community wants to go off about, well, this isn't right, well, then you're going to limit the roles of everybody. And is that the right thing to do? I really don't care about who they are, what they do, what their personal life is like. Did it work in the movie or the show? That's all I care about.
So that's one where I shake my head saying, are we in the same universe? And then the Bernie Sanders tweet over the weekend. If we are a nation that can pay baseball players hundreds of millions of dollars, don't tell me we can't afford to pay teachers the salaries they deserve. What does one have to do with another? Number one, the nation doesn't pay anybody.
No.
Nope. The owners pay the baseball players, and that comes from ticket sales, and that comes from TV audience watching them.
Ah, unless you have Bernie has his way, and we nationalize baseball.
Well, you know, I've seen the debate's been going on about women basketball players.
Mm-hmm.
That women basketball players in the WNBA are paid way less.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not right. There needs to be gender parity. It's not based on gender.
No, it's not.
It's based on audience.
Yep.
That's simple. It's based on audience and what they will pay for the product.
Well, you have how many different minor leagues that are out there?
Oh, yeah.
It wouldn't matter if minor league ball, whether it was remember the old CBA, a small town that I was in had a CBA team. It was cool. I mean, you go out to, they use the local university, to play their games, and you could do local promotions. It was cool. I love going out to some of the local ball clubs around here, the Fort Worth Cats and other, you know, baseball clubs that they've been gone for a while. It's fun. I know, but back in the day, it was really great. I did some play-by-play with another friend of ours,
Emil,
on their local station as Harry Carey, and that was a great experience. So, point being is that if it doesn't have the television, if it doesn't have the big ratings, if it doesn't have huge numbers of people, then it's not going to make the same money.
Well, it's, you know, and you see what baseball players are making, and it's a ton of cash.
Mm-hmm.
But how are salaries determined? Salaries are determined by a couple of things. Salaries are determined by the in the private sector,
mm-hmm,
by the productivity that you give, and the rarity of the talent that you have. And that's why baseball players make a lot of money. That's why Hollywood actors make a lot of money. irrespective of if you are a female actor and you can pull in an audience, you will make a ton of cash.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a male and they know you can do it, you will pull in a ton of cash. And there's two things there. The productivity that you bring, which means you can bring in the cash, and the fact that nobody else can do it but you. And that's where you are completely exclusive there. Because nobody else, if you're at the top of your game in Hollywood, nobody else can bring in what you can bring in at that point.
Mm-hmm.
They'll look at it and say, okay, you'll be a guarantee. Keanu Reeves and John Wick.
Mm-hmm.
The first one brought in, I think, 70-something million.
Right.
Total. Total. The second one, 170 mm-hmm. Million, which means he got a huge, I don't know what it was, but I'm sure he got a huge payday for John Wick 3. Mm-hmm. Nobody else could get that paycheck except Keanu Reeves because nobody else can play that character in John Wick 3.
He took down the Avengers for the number one spot at the box office on opening weekend. It doubled what number two did, which doubled in turn what number one did on its opening weekend. And that's the way it plays out. And Robert Downey Jr. gets a massive paycheck for all the Avengers stuff because he has a back-end deal that apparently just it's a backup deal where they back up massive amounts of cash in a truck mm-hmm. and just dump it on his lawn, apparently. But he earned it. Bernie doesn't understand earnings at all. He believes that money belongs to the people. First of all, he believes that there is no such thing as expansion of wealth, that there's a finite amount of wealth. But he believes that wealth belongs to the people.
One has absolutely nothing to do with another. You are comparing apples and oranges, but you read the comments below the Bernie supporters, they all agree with them. That's right. Should be able to pay teachers more. Well, yeah, okay, if you believe we should be paying teachers more, that's fine. Paying teachers more have nothing to do with baseball players making millions.
Right.
Nothing.
Right.
If you believe that you can get a better result through paying a teacher more, through just overall salaries or incentives, you can have that debate. The debate has nothing to do with how much baseball players make.
Nope.
Nothing.
Nope.
One has to do with how much a player's worth is in the private marketplace, and the other is what taxpayers decide.
Is Bernie going to take his book earnings and give it to teachers?
Yeah. Did Bernie deserve to become a millionaire through writing one book?
Right. We should take that money and give it to the people who are teaching our children. That's the just thing
to do. And this is another perfect example. And look, and this is what Bernie Sanders did last time. And people believe that Bernie Sanders' philosophy is moral when it's immoral.
Mm-hmm.
It's not right. It's wrong. Because what Bernie Sanders did and really did in his last campaign was say to college students, you deserve a free ride because the billionaire somehow screwed you over.
Right.
And baseball players are making hundreds of millions of dollars, and that's wrong, and you should make more. What does Bernie appeal to? Envy and jealousy. Two of the worst characteristics in humans.
That never, ever worked to a just end. They don't.
No.
Ever.
And you know it because he makes an apples to oranges comparison.
Mm-hmm.
What teachers get paid is on the taxpayers. The taxpayers of that community and the taxpayers of that state. That's what that's on. And it's what they decide to do. And it has the possibility of either helping education or hurting education. You can have that debate. We can have that debate all day long. It's got nothing to do with what baseball players make. He throws that in there because he wants to throw in that envy argument. The envy and jealousy. Look at these people. They just hit a ball with a bat. People pay in the private market to see people hit a ball with a bat.
Yep.
That simple.
People pay for books, Bernie.
Yeah, people pay for books.
even when ignorant people write them.
So I saw that and just went, is there any critical thinking on the left at all? And I'm telling you, Eric, it was like this past weekend having the discussions that I had with a couple of people on the left and just putting out all the arguments about, you know, about Trump. Mm-hmm. And this came, again, from them. You like Trump? You know, like some of the, I don't like him at all. The things that he did and the Russian... Let's break it down. Broke it down to everyone. No argument. None. Zero.
Right.
Do people think at all anymore?
It's all emotion.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up following the top of the hour, we'll get to more of your calls and comments. A few people wanted to comment on the Bernie Sanders tweet about comparing baseball players to teachers. So, mm-hmm. We will get to that. Plus, Bill Barr, Attorney General Bill Barr, speaks on what questions he has. And he's made a case that you and I have said for 2 years that as we continued asking questions, we had more questions to ask. And then as you got some answers to some of the questions, you even had more. You got some answers to some of the questions. You just had more questions to those answers that you got.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he is saying. And his questions are exactly the same questions that you and I have had over the last couple of years. Is how did this all happen? What happened in election 2016? What really happened? What's the truth?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here. We're just talking about the tweet that Bernie Sanders put out over the weekend. If we are a nation that can pay baseball players hundreds of millions of dollars, don't tell me we can't afford to pay teachers the salaries they deserve. And I read things like that and say, what universe is he in? There's no correlation between the two. If you wish to have an argument on whether teachers in your school district or your state should be paid more or less, that's up to the taxpayers of that state and local communities to decide what they wish to do and how much in additional taxes they wish to pay. It has nothing to do with baseball players at all. Nothing. But they bring that in order to bring up envy and jealousy. But I wanted to bring this up here because he was also on Meet the Press yesterday. And he says, I'll play a quote here in just a minute, but I want to just read this part. This is a transcript. Quote, we're going to try to beat Trump, but you know what else we're going to try to do? We're going to try to transform the United States of America, deal with this massive level of income and wealth inequality, deal with Wall Street, deal with the greed of insurance companies, drug companies, and the fossil fuel industry. So our campaign has a different goal. It's to transform this country, and we're taking on the entire establishment. Now, it's interesting because he's using some of the exact same words that Ocasio-Cortez has used. And then I want to play this quote here because he then backs up what I just said in this little portion. Here we go.
It's not enough. If we're talking, for example, about climate change, what the scientists tell us is that we have 12 years before irreparable damage is done to this planet.
So that's all I want to play because he's to the 12 years now.
Yeah, right.
So the 12 years is back. And who was it? Who went to 10? Was it O'Rourke went to 10, didn't he, last couple weeks ago? He went to 10 years.
Yeah.
But now they're back to 12 again, and now it's not just figuratively, now it's back to literally again. They're trying to figure out whether to use that or not, and I guess Bernie Sanders is jumping on it. But it seems that since they have been friendly, and she has said positive things about him, it looks like that's a decision that Bernie Sanders has made.
Right.
And as we've said over and over again, Bernie Sanders, an avowed socialist, as we know, has said complimentary things about socialist economies in the past, has praised the former Soviet Union, has praised bread lines, as we know. Bread lines are good because there are some countries where you have a dictator where you don't even have bread lines because the people starve, so bread lines are good.
Right. It could be, his argument is, it could be worse.
It could be worse, yes.
Yeah, that's his argument.
Let's take it from where it is now, where we don't have bread lines, to bread lines, because bread lines are worse than not having bread lines and people starving.
You should be grateful for the bread line.
It's just, again, we have stated this before, and I'm quite confident that we are correct. By understanding the human nature of the citizens of the United States, the voting public, we are not becoming socialists. We're becoming gimmeists. There's a difference. Socialism is the actual belief that you're going, because everybody knows, Bernie Sanders knows. He sees what happens in Venezuela. He sees what happens even in the countries that he proposes are great socialist countries like Norway and Sweden, which they even debate with Bernie Sanders and say, don't call us socialist. We're much more of a free market economy than the United States. When it comes to the actual economy, as they say, we have more social welfare programs. That doesn't necessarily mean that we're socialist when it comes to industry and free markets. Mm-hmm. But as they also, we also know, and we've talked about it specifically, their social welfare programs are having major problems. But the thing is, even in those states, you have less freedom of the individual because you are, even the middle class is hugely taxed. And when you look at those countries and they say, well, they're successful socially and or as socialist countries, and not socially, but socialist countries, and seems to work out fine, not to the middle class, who they tax the daylights out of, because that's the dirty little secret that the socialists don't want you to know. When they try to bring socialism in, they try to sell you with, you get all the gifts. We're going to give you this. Gimmeism, not socialism, is how they attempt to introduce you to socialism, but they don't tell you on the back end the fact that it's not sustainable. And you, as an individual in the middle class, if you think it's tight now, wait till they start taxing you.
Yeah, to believe that they're going to give you a bunch of stuff and not come after your wealth is false. If you have that belief, you should give it up right away, because that's the approach. Build this emotional drive based on jealousy, envy, and the end result is that everyone has a massive government in every corner of their lives making decisions for you. You're not going to be able, you don't make your decision, we'll make your decision, because the redistribution of wealth, if you believe it's just for those playing baseball compared to teachers, nope. You work two jobs and you make $100,000 and somebody else works one job and makes $30,000. How is that fair? They'll decide. The government will decide what's fair. You don't make that decision. And ultimately, it has to be done through the confiscation of wealth. Ultimately, it has to be done through the destruction of the expansion of wealth and the destruction of industry. It can't be done without that.
Well, again, he's going to the transformation, the whole thing, that using the same terminology, you know, using the 12 years, saying that, you know, we have to.
Right.
When it comes to the fossil fuel companies, we've got to take them over.
Right.
We have to beat big oil, big pharma, and the health insurance companies. What do you mean beat? What do you mean beat big oil? What does that mean, beat?
Take them over.
Right.
They're going to have to nationalize all of those. That's exactly what he wants to do. We already know he wants to do that with health care. And with health care, of course, Medicare for All, that would include nationalizing the whole system, including the pharmaceutical end.
Well, as we've stated before with AOC, and I think this is where he's headed down, he said, because he's using the same language. They won't get specific because they can't get specific, because if they got specific, the American public would say, you're out of your mind. Even Democrats would say, you're out of your mind, because what they're talking about is nationalization of those industries.
Yeah.
As we said with Ocasio-Cortez, in order to do what they wish to do, and they're using the 10 to 12 years as the panic button, you would have to nationalize those countries. You would have to put in a communist philosophy to transform this country the way that they wish to do it, because nobody is going to invest. There isn't. Look at when the government gets out of solar panels. Look what happens when the government gets out of wind power. Anybody really want to invest in it? When the government subsidies aren't there? No, because there's no profit. And so what they wish to do is, when it comes to electric cars, does anybody, how much money is Tesla making if it wasn't for government subsidies?
No, they wouldn't be profitable.
They wouldn't be profitable. They're profitable because of subsidies. That's it. Remember, even when Musk talked about by 2020 we'll be profitable, they said, well, even without the subsidies? Well, no, with the subsidies.
Right.
We'll be profitable.
Right.
Well, then you're not profitable. You can't make money. So if you can't find investors, that means the government has to take over the automobile companies to build all electric vehicles. Because when you tell all the automobile companies you must make electric vehicles and no gasoline vehicles, the market crashes.
Yep.
Investors fly. Government takeover is the only way that you can do it, because there will not be private investment unless the government comes in with massive, massive subsidies. Because remember, you need more subsidies, because the subsidies don't pay all for the electric vehicles. You pay more when you pay for a gasoline vehicle. Part of that cost of a gasoline vehicle is going to help subsidize the electric vehicles that these companies all make, because they can't make a profit on them.
Right.
With the subsidies, it's gone. So the only way that you can do it, if you wish to transform it and say, as remember, Ocasio-Cortez said, all gasoline vehicles gone, all airplanes gone. It's where they wish to go. They backed off on it when challenged on it because it was so insane. But the first thing that they promoted is what they want. Believe me. And so they want to transform the country into complete and total bankruptcy. Be honest with you, they want to do it so quick that Bernie Sanders, which is Ocasio-Cortez's plan, I believe, because he's using the exact same language and she's showing a lot of support for him, would crash the country quicker than Venezuela crashed.
Oh, yeah.
What, you think Bernie Sanders and AOC are the genius? Oh, well, Venezuela did it wrong. Bernie Sanders and AOC, who did not know what a garbage disposal was. Well, I never had one. Well, there's a lot of things I've never had before either. I've never had a jet, yet I know how a jet engine works. I've never owned a diesel engine, but I know how a diesel works. She had no idea what a garbage disposal was.
Yeah.
By her own admission, and she wishes to transform the United States of America with her plan of nationalizing industry.
They know better than you
right.
do.
If we put the right people in, we won't become a Venezuela, is what we're told. Bernie Sanders and AOC are those people to do it.
Yep. She can be the garbage disposal czar.
if you believe that, you are the biggest sucker walking this earth right now. If you believe that. And again, as we said with Bernie Sanders, when people look at him as being somebody who's to be looked up to on the left, he's not. He's absolutely immoral. What Bernie Sanders promotes envy and jealousy. That's all he does.
Yeah.
He goes out and attempts to attract people and become attracted to them by legitimizing the worst instinct in human beings, envy and jealousy and suspicion. Those people are in a system, and those people, big oil, they're all just ripping you off. They're evil. The billionaires are evil. You're a victim. You're never going to be able to make it because of them. Like you said, when Bernie Sanders was out telling college students they could never make it.
Right.
Who does that? What adult goes out and tells young people they can't make it? What kind of evil mind does that? Manipulative, evil mind. And we know it is, because anybody who promotes envy and jealousy, that's not moral to me. Is that right to you?
No.
Can college students not make it today? Is that actually true? And can college students not make it today because billionaires exist in this country? Of course that's not true.
It's rigged against you. The only way that you're going to get through is with us.
Is with us.
We're the hero.
Destroying what exists and giving that wealth to you. How immoral can you get? 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, we'll play some of the audio from the Fox interview with Bill Barr, just the Attorney General, just to see where his head is at. I know there's a little lull here, but the storm is coming.
Yeah, it's because the work has to be done. It's going to be something that I can't imagine the size of the task before Bill Barr or the federal prosecutor in this case, because you have to sift through evidence, and like with any investigation, not only do you have to find that evidence, you have to tie the people to it, but there's no telling how many people could be culpable when it comes down to that whole investigation. And a lot of it, I'm guessing, too, has to do with any information that will come from the Inspector General, because that federal prosecutor is not going to be able to get a lot of this stuff from what the IG is going to put out until that report is done, which could happen any time.
Let's go to Chris in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Chris, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah, I was kind of curious as to under what consideration are you considering a presidential candidate like Bernie Sanders to be evil?
I just stated, as we stated before, you just asked a question, we just answered you. You're asking a question that we just answered. He's immoral and therefore evil because he promotes envy and jealousy. He tells young people they can't make it. He tells them that the billionaires have the money. He scares the daylights out of people by telling them that in 12 years we must reform society into a socialist government. Otherwise, we are doomed. He wants to take us down the same path of Venezuela. But it is him promoting envy and jealousy that is wrong. The worst instincts in human beings. He promotes that. He sells that to people. That, to me, is evil, to do that. I don't tell any young person you can't make it. to go out and tell young people, as he did in 2016, that you can't make it. The system is rigged against you and you can't make it because of the billionaires. Number one is a lie. Number two is completely immoral to be telling young people that they can't make it in this system in the United States.
The entire theory evolves around the thought, the false thought, that there is a finite amount of wealth and that it belongs to a finite amount of people. Not just a finite amount, but particular people. And it's always that group. That the billionaire list, or the list of rich people, is never changes. It's always the same people, and it's a finite amount of wealth. It does not, there is no such thing as wealth expansion. Actually, he's one story that can defeat that theory. His story of becoming a millionaire. Here's your forecast.
We won't see the same intense risk of severe weather we saw yesterday as a cold front continues to push east, but there will be the chance for some high winds, hail, and thunderstorms along a cold front moving eastbound right along the Mississippi River. And as it progresses eastward, it's going to lose some energy. We do have a very wet week ahead from North Texas into Oklahoma, Missouri, and portions of Wisconsin and Minnesota, expecting in that region another 5 inches of rain this week. It'll be much drier in the mid-Atlantic and deep south. The west is under a big cool down with chances for rain this week. Los Angeles today, the high only 67. Phoenix, 78. Denver, 58. The upper Midwest is cooled down. Kansas City, 68. Indianapolis, near 70. 90-degree readings today from Texas into the deep south up into the mid-Atlantic. The national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Disturbing on so many levels. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. So the last gentleman was, when we were talking about Bernie Sanders and socialism, was asking the question, why is socialism, in essence, why is socialism evil? Socialism is evil because it says property should be owned collectively. Socialism is evil because socialism tries to make the argument that you, as an individual, don't own your property. That you, that if you're in the free market, understand this. Understand what you, Elizabeth Warren was talking about business yesterday, that and was saying the exact kind of things that, you know, Bernie Sanders was saying, has been saying. But the whole concept of socialism is you as an individual, what you earn is not yours. I don't know what's more evil than that.
Well, and that people are born with the right to your whatever you have, any of your wealth,
right?
Simply because they were born, simply because they exist.
Right. I'm talking in a government system. I'm talking about murder and things like that. But when it comes to a government, when it comes to a government system and how government should be set up, the belief of the people in a society that what you toil for is not yours, what you own is not yours. And that's what socialism is. They may not promote it that way, but that's what the ultimate, if you look at Marx's socialism, that's what it's about. It's the moral concept that property should be owned collectively. Mm-hmm. Now, what they're saying is that, okay, we don't want the fascist idea of it being owned, you know, for example, a dictator owning all of it. We want a democratic socialism where the voters elect representatives and those representatives will manage more property each and every year. Because nobody is talking to going to full communism. Nobody ever does. But as we have seen, as you say, pay more taxes. There's not enough revenue to the government. Federal government should get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. We see now what's going to happen down the line because of the baby boomers having to be in the system of Social Security that's going to have to be paid for by the next generation, by the millennials.
Well, and Bernie is flat out promoting communism here beyond socialism because he's promoting that the government take over the industry, oil industry and medical industry, medical care, the health care industry, which is something they have been promoting for a long time. But he's promoting it to the extent that forget about just getting benefits from the government. There can't be a private sector offering, which means the government would have to control every hospital, every single one, fully and completely. Well, that's not socialism. That's communism. The control of the industry, the controlling of the means of production, energy and health care, two massive, massive portions of our production here in the United States, of our economy. And that's what he's promoting and has been for a long time. And it's based on jealousy because you don't have something he wants you to believe it's yours.
So the overall concept of socialism and understand, and most people don't understand the concept of socialism of what and what Marx was talking about in socialism, because the true socialist believes that that the few dictating where the capital is allocated can make better choices than the masses by the millions involved in voluntary agreements with each other that are backed by contracts. And that's why you have contract law, even in a democratic republic. Contracts, you know, you protect that are enforced by the government between two parties that voluntarily are engaged in it. And in that form of doing business, if someone is harmed by you doing business who was are not involved in the contract, that is also taken care of by the legal system.
Mm-hmm.
The socialist attempts to tell you that capitalism is whatever you wish it to be. We were talking about this Friday. Who do we play was talking about slavery?
I forget.
Oh, we played it last week. Talking about the capitalism doesn't work, you know, because
Cornel West.
Cornel West.
Mm-hmm.
We were playing the interview with Cornel West, and who was on Fox News, mm-hmm. the very well known socialist, mm-hmm. who was perverting what capitalism is completely. The capitalism, you got slavery. Slavery's not capitalism. Slavery may be a form of totalitarianism, but slavery certainly isn't capitalism because slavery isn't voluntary. For capitalism to work, you need voluntary agreements between the not just two parties, but whatever parties are involved in that particular contract with each other. So the concept of socialism, where you don't earn anything, that what you earn is not yours.
Because ultimately that's what it gets down to for everyone,
right,
by the
where
way.
The concept of socialism where your property should be controlled by the collective, what do you lose in that equation? You lose freedom. You lose freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the founding fathers ever thought that the middle class or the upper middle class, when you take taxes all across the board, could be paying 40 or 50% of what they earned, that their property would be taken to that kind of an extent? And it's still not enough.
No.
It's not enough.
No.
We hear it all the time. We need to raise taxes aren't high enough. We've gone through it all. We've gone through the chart came out the other day. The top 1% still paying 40% of income taxes.
Mm-hmm.
The top 5% paying what? When I say the top 1% paying about 40%, mm-hmm. the top 5% paying like 60%. It's still not enough. No. We're being told it's still. When will it be enough? Because every time you decide, and what do we hear from the left? What do we hear from Democrats? That still, we need to take that money and transfer more. We can't even balance the budget now. And they're talking about increasing the budget 2, 3, 4 times greater, 5 times greater when you talk 50 times greater when you talk AOC and her particular plan, which has to come from what? It comes back to when Obama said that, you know, hey, you didn't build this. The government had to be there to build all the infrastructure. The government didn't build the infrastructure.
Elizabeth Warren made the same comment just a couple of weeks ago.
Yep. Government didn't build it. Private sector built all of it. The money only has value because wealth has been created by the private sector. And that's why it's evil. When you engage in a system that says your property that you earn must be managed collectively, you lose freedom and you lose liberty. That's evil. Now, they sell it to you by stating, oh, it's all going to be great, and we wish to make the healthcare system better, and we wish to make this system better. While Democrats, for the last 50 years, Eric, have been obsessed with private monopolies and private monopolies gaining power and talking about the evils of monopoly, and the left specifically, always in overdrive on that topic, yet the same liberals are the same ones that are stating that another group of people involved in collectively owning all of the means of production, all of the money, or much more of the money, because they never get to all of the money, because they know they couldn't sell that. But you hear it from Democrats now. The problem with government is we don't have enough money. We can't even pay what we have now. Fine, you need to tax the people more. How much more? Well, we need to revamp our entire society. We need to stop making cars. We need to stop making, think about this. We need to stop making oil. We need to stop making natural gas. We need to stop making cars. Our houses are too big that we live in. We need to get rid of the private. What do you mean? The population is too great. We need to make the population less.
Which one of Bernie's three homes are bigger?
Which is the
biggest one? He needs to hand that over.
So if you wish to know where it's immoral, where it's evil, we just stated it right there. And that's not our opinion on what socialism is. That's straight from Marx.
Which means, again, you get no and if you have no property rights, everything falls away very quickly. What rights do you have if the government controls everything?
Well, it takes away incentive, as we've seen that in every socialist communist society. It takes away incentive. Incentive is what makes everything go. The incentive to do what? To be able to reap the benefits or to reap and own the wealth that I create, that I produce. It's a basic concept in morality and individual freedom. And I'm sorry, maybe we just assume that people understand that, and so we have to have a lesson in why socialism is evil every once in a while. Because when you're told, oh, you just get everything that you want, and it's all fine, well, maybe then you're like the last caller. I don't know why you call it evil. Well, that's why. Now, if you believe that you wish to live in a society that does not promote freedom and liberty through the individual process of you by working, being able to own what you create for you to acquire wealth, and therefore you to decide what happens with your life and not a collective, then you're right. We're completely on a different planet than each other, which started this whole conversation a little while ago.
Because it is about gimmeism. It is about, because it starts with gimmeism every single time. You don't have something, and the rich have something. It's unfair that they have that while you have nothing.
Which, of course, you don't have nothing.
Well, and at the end of it, Compare yourself now to the next guy behind you.
Well, as we stated before, the average person today, even in poverty, has a better life than billionaires 100 years ago.
Well, you and you ask yourself about the behavior. It doesn't matter about behavior. The guy next to you works two or three jobs, and he's making two or three times as much as you. Doesn't matter. He needs to hand that over.
Yep.
Because they use words like have, not earned. Earned.
We live in a society now where we're getting closer to entitlement spending, mm-hmm. means tested.
Yes.
So those who did the right thing and earn more money and put more into the system will be punished because they did the right thing.
Right. You went out of your way to prepare for the fact or for the inevitable that the government would not be able to fund it. And okay, great. Good thing you did that because we're going to make sure you don't get what you paid in. Nothing you can do about it.
It's the belief that the collective should share property that's evil.
Yes.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. We go to Kevin in Dallas, Texas. Kevin, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey. So the previous caller believes leftists are altruists, not thieves.
Yeah.
So why do you think Bernie Sanders is evil? Caller, it's because leftists are thieves, not altruist. I don't fall for the Robin Hood Act. Robin Hood has discovered a license to steal. If he can make theft look like altruism, not theft, he's got a license to steal. So I take 95 cents on the dollar and give poor downtrodden guy the other five to continue justify stealing. That's a license to steal.
Well, when you talk about the altruism there, you're going right to Ayn Rand and right. and talking about the difference between the system that we live in and communism, that it's always promoted as something good.
Well, and again, it gets back to the, you know, what's immoral about it is there may be a moral obligation. People may believe they have a moral obligation to give back voluntarily. That's different than being compelled by the government to hand over your wealth. The government coming in by law and confiscating that wealth. Huge difference in morality.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.